Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Kaz Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. No Carter Rodriguez on this episode, and you guys might be thinking, after a couple bad losses, is Cutter ducking out of his responsibilities? Is he being a bad fan? Other listeners who have been around a little longer know he didn't watch either of those games and has no idea what's going on. But that doesn't matter because I am fortunate today to have a great guest. Jason Pat is making his return to the Chase Down Podcast, host of the Cash Considerations Podcast. Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Man, it is a pleasure to have you back. I wish it was under more fun circumstances from our perspective. The Cavs and Bulls are about to play their second game in, this week. And the first one didn't go so well. The Bulls have managed to win their last two games without Zach LaVine, getting a close win against the Cavs, and then beating Boston in Boston, which I'm sure sent Boston into a spiral like it did for Cavs Twitter. But can you speak to what's been going on with the Bulls the last two games? Because it is a little surprising to see that they have had some success without their key cog on offense.
Yeah, so I mean, before that, the Bulls were basically at rock bottom. They lost to the Grizzlies, I think it was their fifth or sixth straight loss. Like, they were on the verge of possibly being out of the play-in spot. The Cavs were right on their tail. So if the Bulls lost to the Cavs, when was that, Saturday? I thought their season basically would have been over. Like, they just continued the tailspin. They would have been, I think, out of the play-in spot. And it was close there for a second. I know the Bulls went up, I think it was like 12, 14 points in that second half. And then Darius Garland went on a nice run, got it to within three. And then the Cavs just kind of stopped scoring. Nikola Vucevic came up big. And Vucevic has been huge. I mean, this is a reason why you trade for Nikola Vucevic. I know for me, I was a big fan of the trade. The Bulls just were kind of going nowhere, even with like having Zach playing really well. And they gave up Wendell Carter Jr. They gave up a couple of draft picks. Maybe controversial to some people for the Bulls to give up those picks in that spot, but they did protect them at least top four 2021 and 2023. It did not start well with Zach playing, like with Vucevic playing there. I think the chemistry was an issue. They had some tough schedule. But Vucevic in that Cavs game finished really strong. And then in the Celtics game, he basically put them on their back. In the first half, 17 of his 29 points when the rest of the Bulls were terrible. They kind of kept it close. They were only down six at half, and then they had a big third quarter powered by Vuce. Finally got some help. He ended up, like I said, 29 points out of 102. And the Bulls defense finally kind of showed up. And like this, I know some of this stuff will the takes will come after you, especially when it's like defensive involved, like Zach LaVine. He's not exactly the most respected defender out there. He has never really had the defensive reputation. So when the Bulls have a couple games where they hold two teams in a row under 100 points, so it's like, oh, well, are the Bulls better without Zach out there? Because their defense is much better. Like, with the ball is moving a bit more. And obviously I think that stuff is, and especially in this season, it's kind of nonsense. I mean, in the Cavs, no disrespect, they're not exactly good. They're one of the worst offensive teams in the NBA. And then the Celtics are basically half their team has the plague. Jason Tatum had his worst game, maybe a worst shooting game of the season. Jaylen Brown started really hot, but I think he was dealing with an illness as well. And I think he was dealing with a shoulder problem at the end of the game. So like, it's like the Bulls played hard. I'll give them credit. Like, they played hard. They didn't quit. They won like the turnover battle. They smashed them on second chance points. Again, Vucevic was awesome. Having that other all-star there when Zach goes out really helps just to kind of carry that scoring load. And you play hard, you get a couple nice wins. But like, I mean, just in this weird season, the Bulls are actually kind of lucky that they, besides Zach, he's out with the COVID stuff, but like the rest of the roster is healthy. So like, compared to a lot of these teams, we're seeing all these injuries pile up across the league. The rest of the Bulls rotation is intact. So like, you have Vooch, you have a strong bench with like Thad Young. Kobe White's played a little better lately after he's been struggling. So a couple nice wins for the Bulls, kind of coming back again from rock bottom. But I mean, they're still just a mediocre team, and it'll be interesting to see how they fare in this rematch against the Cavs on Wednesday, right? Yeah.
That sounds right to me. It's It's funny because we were talking about the matchup, just like we touched on it basically when we were talking on Friday that, yeah, Levine's out, but there's still a lot of talent there. Like, obviously, Vucevic is an all-star. You have a lot of other players that have been drafted high that, like, Coby White didn't have a good performance against the Cavs, but had a good performance against Boston. Lauri Markkanen is capable of having good performances, and there's talent on that roster. Satoransky was kind of questionable, and he ended up playing against the Cavs. And it's funny because I think what's happened for the Cavs, so this going into this week was probably the most important week that they've had in a very long time, because even if you felt like I felt that it was unrealistic, or not unrealistic, but unlikely that they were going to get the play-in spot, this was a really good opportunity for them to come out strong and potentially win some of these games. And I almost feel like they ran into a situation where they weren't necessarily as healthy as they thought they were. Like, they saw Kevin Love out there, they saw Larry Nance, they saw Jared Allen active in the lineup, and those guys aren't really performing at the level that you'd expect. Jared Allen still looks a little rusty. Larry Nance just hasn't looked like himself. I don't know if you saw the reports, but he lost 20 pounds with an illness prior to coming back. And Kevin Love, like, he just didn't play well. Like, you talk about in that game, in the fourth quarter there, he missed that wide open three that would have tied the game, and things kind of ballooned from there. Can you relate to that to some extent when you look at Chicago after this trade deadline, where they added new pieces, but given the circumstances of the situation, it took time to gel? Like, do you think that that's what's happening, or are these two wins that they've had without Levine not a product of them getting it all together, but just kind of the flukes and the weird ebbs and flows of this season?
I mean, maybe a bit of both. I mean, after that trade, they had like a 5-game West road trip. So like they had to go play San Antonio and they got blown out in that first game. The Spurs aren't great, but like, I mean, they're a decent team, like play-in playoff team. Then they go to Golden State and Steph was back. That was, I think, Steph's first game back from the tailbone injury. And Steph roasted them. The Warriors had good games from like Andrew Wiggins. And then
Steph's doing a lot of that lately. He's out of his damn mind.
Yeah. Yeah, Steph has been ridiculous. So like him coming back, just like tough break for the Bulls, and he had a huge game and the Warriors played great and the Bulls got smoked. Then they have to go play, I think it was like Utah and Phoenix. So, I mean, just 2 games on the road, you're not going to win. And they were actually competitive for those games. Zach did miss the Phoenix game, and the Bulls, I guess competitive is, they were down like big at one point. They kind of came back, made it interesting, and they couldn't win. But still, just like, those aren't games you're really expecting to win, even after you make this trade and with Zach out for one of them. And then they won a couple games after that. It's just been kind of like a roller coaster. So I think these last two games are just kind of back on the upswing on this roller coaster. Like you mentioned, the Bulls still have some good players. Like, they're not like bottom of the barrel, like talent wise. You still have another all-star in Vooch. Again, like the rest of the team is still pretty healthy. So like when you have some decent depth, you have an all-star, even without Zach, like you should be in a position to at least be competitive in these games and steal wins against a team like the Cavs and a Celtics team that was not close to 100%. And when the Celtics best player had shot 3 of 17, like those are games you got to win if you're going for a play-in spot. I do think like some of the urgency might've kicked in as well. Like after Zach goes down and after they like last week, they lose a game to the Magic where they were down like 20 some points against a Magic team that has just nobody right now. And obviously they just traded everybody away with Vucevic, with Aaron Gordon, with Evan Fournier. I mean, they have nobody, and the Bulls got just their doors blown off in this game. They made it kind of close, but I mean, they were getting embarrassed by like Dante Hall and like Cole Anthony and Michael Carter Williams. And like, I do wonder if like that was a bit of a wake up call. They did come back and they lose the Grizzlies on Friday before the Cavs game, and that was probably a wake up call as well. They gave up like 126, and it's just like, you know, like if we don't start like just playing harder, playing with more urgency and just kind of figuring this out, like this, we're gonna just totally lose this spot in the play-in tournament. So come back with a bit of a better effort against the Cavs and the Celtics, and now they're kind of a bit on the upswing. And they got a couple winnable games coming up. Then the schedule theoretically gets hard again. We have no idea what's going to go on with some of these, like especially down the stretch. I mean, we just Harden's out till the playoffs. Like,
yeah, it's so hard to get a read. Like, yeah, you can look at kind of the wins and losses record, but like I feel like every time I talk to somebody, and like this is part of why I love having people on that cover other teams that are following things closely, because there's so much context that goes into this season. Like, you can call it excuses, you can call it context, you can call it just facts, but like it's absolute insanity. It's a really difficult season to evaluate, and I definitely feel like this is the Cavs are experiencing at least recently, I'm seeing a few games where, and I tweeted this out before the Detroit game, where I felt like it was a trap game. And I think when Chicago played Orlando, it was a little bit of the same thing, where they're just going into games with the assumption, hey, they got a bunch of guys out. I'm looking at a lengthy injury report, or even against Chicago, like, oh, Zach LaVine's out. Like, as much as they do have talent, like we noted, you're still not coming out with the same intensity that they had when they played against Brooklyn and the big three was making their debut, right? And the Cavs are not a good enough team to do that. And that's a lesson that you have to learn the hard way. And you hope that they bounce back from this. But now they're also entering a really interesting territory where, as the play-in spot becomes less and less realistic, how are they going to motivate themselves? How are they going to step up? Are they going to come out with a fire against Chicago on Wednesday? That's going to be really interesting. Like, that is a tough sell for JB Bickerstaff. Looking back to that first game, though, before we transition to Wednesday's game, was there anything that stood out to you from watching the Cavs that you didn't necessarily expect? I know this was the second meeting of the year. Was there anything that kind of popped off the screen, positive or negative, about the Cavs?
First, I was going to say that I would like to thank the Cavs for maybe pushing the Bulls into making the Vucevic trade, because the game right before the trade deadline was when the Cavs just kind of embarrassed the Bulls in Chicago, and they're just like down. They just took control down the
again,
stretch.
Better without LaVine. Better without LaVine. They lost with LaVine in the mix.
Yeah, LaVine had like that huge first half, and then we're just like totally invisible in the second half, and the Bulls just like, Bulls fans were so down after that first game, like, and then the Vucevic trade was like, oh my god, like they made a move, like they were spurred into action. So I'd like to thank the Cavs for that, for making that happen.
You're welcome.
And the other game, I think Darius Garland has been really a lot of fun lately. Has been really, really solid. I was looking at his numbers recently, and like, I mean, because especially with looking at him, like Coby White, I mean, they're both what, second year guys, right? And like, both were drafted right around each other. So like, looking at that comparison, I think is really interesting. I think I'd definitely rather have Garland at this point. Coby has been definitely a point of contention, I think, among fans. He's had, with the Bulls giving him like the reins at point guard to start the year, and then he lost the job, and now he's back as the starter with Zach out. It's been really definitely kind of a rough ride for him. So he's been a little better these last few games. I know he didn't shoot that well in the Cavs game, but he did have a decent like assist amount. But yeah, I mean, just I think Garland has been just really impressive, and he helped lead them back almost in that fourth quarter. And that was really good. I mean, besides him, with the Cavs, I'm just really not sure what to think of them at this point. Like, that's Garland fair. And Sexton are really solid. I think they're really nice. Like, you wonder, kind of been similar with the Bulls. Like, they have some nice young players there. Just like, can they be good together? Like, I feel like, and the Love thing has obviously just been kind of a mess because he's barely played the season. He was not good against the Bulls. I think he was what, 2 of 10 from three. You mentioned the big miss that he had down the stretch. And he just like hasn't been there. And when he has been there, like I was looking at his numbers, there's not good because he just really hasn't been healthy all year. So like it's just tough when you're like relying on so many young guys to play big minutes. And I know like depth wise, the Cavs just like aren't that good either. When you're looking at some like the bench, especially with guys just like missing time. So it's like, you like Sexton and Garland, you like Jared Allen's a really nice piece. You mentioned he's really not totally healthy right now either. I mean, Okoro is obviously like very promising as a defender. I know I was looking ahead at some of his numbers recently as well. And like, he's had some bigger games lately. I know JB Bickerstaff was talking him up, his development lately. I mean, that's nice. You just do wonder like, where is that next step going to come? And I mean, again, that's kind of similar to the Bulls. Like, the Bulls got their all-star in Zach this year, and they're still just kind of meandering around. Now they traded for another all-star. So where do the Cavs go with like, they have a nice backcourt, but like how high is the ceiling with Sexton and Garland's that starting backcourt? How good can Okoro become? I honestly have no idea. I can't say I've watched a lot of Cavs basketball this year, but it's like watching the couple of Bulls Cavs game, like watching and looking at his numbers, like great. Like obviously like Profiles is a really nice defender, but like obviously the offense just really has not been there for most part. So like,
yeah, I mean, if you want a good laugh, Jason, look at Isaac Okoro's home and road splits. You obviously don't do it now on the podcast, but do that at some point, because it is absolutely hilarious how much better he plays. Now, he's been playing better on the road. Like, he's just been playing better overall, which I think is what you want to see at this stage of the season, right? Like, those little flashes that kind of give you some hope going into next year of, hey, after an offseason, when he adds some strength, maybe tightens up his handle, maybe that unlocks some things. They're in a really interesting spot right now where I feel like you look at their recent games and it's tough losses, but their reliable contributors right now are those young guys. Now, that might just be the vets working their way back into the rotation. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is they need more out of Kevin Love. Like, Kevin Love's presence out there, even though, let's say right now his shooting is a little less reliable than what Dean Wade has been bringing recently, he still has more gravity. Like, NBA players are going to respect Kevin Love on the floor differently than they respect Dean Wade or just your average shooter that doesn't have the same cachet as Kevin Love. And they just need more production out of them. Like, I don't know if Larry Nance Jr. is going to be available to play on Wednesday. Jared Allen, like, coming back from a concussion a couple weeks off, like, it's going to take him a little bit to get his conditioning up. You hope that he has a better performance because he's such an important part. But Garland, Sexton, and Okoro, like, they've been here now for a consistent while. They haven't really been out with injuries. And all three of them are playing well. And I would imagine as the season kind of progresses and the play-in spot becomes a little more distant, that the focus would shift to, all right, we're just going to focus on developing those guys. Like, that, like, that's going to be the focus of this podcast. Not to give away the game, but, like, once the play-in angle is gone, like, it's just going to be Garland, Sexton, Okoro, Allen, and, like, figuring out who can be part of this long-term future. Now, I'm sure this sounds familiar to you because Chicago's been in a very similar situation where the last 2 years, actually, I've been really riding the, I think Chicago's going to be a playoff team. I've been on that bandwagon. I remember talking to Andrew Sharp, and both of us had Chicago penned in for the eighth seed last year. I thought Chicago is going to be really good this year. What would you say, like, from a team building and developmental standpoint, has been kind of the biggest hurdle for Chicago attempting to find consistency?
The point guard thing has definitely been an issue. I mentioned that with Kobe. He's just not the natural point guard. He just doesn't really have that. And I think it's fair to maybe wonder if Sexton and Garland. I mean, Garland has come along really nicely, it seems. But mm-hmm. I mean, Sexton,
I will jump
is not
at you.
Like,
I will come through this screen if you suggest that Garland is anything other than a franchise point guard. I'm putting my foot down right now, man.
That's fair enough. But yeah, I mean, that's been huge. I think the Bulls, I think they knew. I think a lot of fans figured they needed an upgrade at point guard this year. And, like, they have Tomas Satoransky, nice player, like, great role guy. As your starting point guard, he was not good as the starter last year. And this year, I think he's been really solid off the bench. I mean, if you look at, like, his efficiency, it's really good. But, like, so low volume, he just doesn't put enough pressure on the defense. So it's not good enough for a high-level point guard. I mentioned Kobe. He's been so up and down. He's just really raw as a point guard. So I think that not having that just, like, lead guard guy. And, like, Zach, as good as, like, Zach can be as, like, a scorer, his decision-making is still kind of a mess, especially, like, in crunch time when he can sometimes go into the hero ball. And he can hit ridiculous shots, but, like, I mean, we've seen even this year, even in his all-star season, like, he's missed clutch shots, he's made some bad decisions, and, like, if that's one of his big flaws still, it's kind of the tendency to go hero ball. So, like, not having that guy to, like, really just set the offense and really just run that offense, I think, has been a problem. And then besides that, look, when you looked at the Bulls are running, like, a lot of youth-heavy lineups the last couple of years, and they just – when you run the youth heavy lineups and you don't have good vets, like, a lot of, and it's, they're going to struggle. It's going to be a struggle. So, like, this year, especially, like, Billy Donovan was really, like, trying to thread a needle. Like, because you have Thad Young there, you have Satoransky, and Thad Young has been great all season, but the Bulls were, like, starting for most of the season. They were starting a really young lineup. They had Kobe White, you had Zach, you had Patrick Williams, you had Lowry Markin, and Wendell Carter Jr. That was, you're starting, like, an all youthful. I mean, whatever, if you want to call Zach young, I mean, he's been in the league for a while, but still, you're basically starting in, like, an all young core starting lineup. And their starting lineup was getting their doors blown off all the time. Like, they had one of the worst lineups in the league. Then like Zach or Thad and Sato would come in, like Garrett Temple, and the bench would destroy. So it was a matter of trying to find that, like, balance between young lineups and the young developing, and then having vets come in as well to, like, take you to that next step. And then obviously you need those young guys to develop and really good, or you need to get a star some way to become really, really good. And I think just after a while, the new Bulls front office is like, this isn't going anywhere. Like, we have Zach having, like, an incredible first half of the season, all-star level player, incredible efficiency. And the Bulls were still just, like, kind of just meandering along just because the young lineups were just not working. So I think they were like, all right, with Zach's free agency coming up next offseason, like, and he's never been in the playoffs, he's never won, like, we got to, like, show him that, like, we're ready to win now. We can't just kind of keep on this path of like, we're going to build through all these young guys. Because like Lowry just has been disappointed. I mean, Lowry looks like right now he's not going to be there next year. Mm. Carter.
We'll get into Lowry in a little bit because I want to pick your brain on him, but yeah. Sorry to cut you off.
No, all good. I mean, that's obviously a part of it. I know I've had discussions with Cavs guys about Lowry before. So I think it just got to a point where like, you know, we just can't do this. Like I mentioned that Cavs game before the break, which is like such a downer. We're not going anywhere. We need to make a big move. So they kind of cash in on some of these young guys and they go to more of a win now thing with Vucevic. Again, you can argue whether doing that and making that kind of win now move with Vucevic and like pairing him with LaVine, two like offense guys, first guys, and that they now have to build out a roster that can like defend around him, whether that like how high their ceiling actually is these next couple of years. But I do think that at least I think is a sign to LaVine that they're ready to at least maybe win a bit more now, but there were definitely tons of growing pains with these young guys the last couple of years between injuries, between guys just really not making that step, not having that legit point guard there. And I think Lowry also has been hurt by not having like a really good point guard there, honestly, as well. So like, I think the point guard thing has definitely just been a huge conversation. And then just so many young guys, when you're trying to develop so many young guys together, it just can be hard to win games because, unless like they're like transcendent guys. And even then, like, I mean, you look at the Pelicans have young, really young players and they have a transcendent guy in Zion and they still stink. Like it can be hard to win games with so many young players.
Yeah, like typically when you look at young players that are impactful and actually in winning situations, like there's usually a really strong support system in place. Like even look at Charlotte, like when LaMelo Ball went down, that team just kept winning, like until Gordon Hayward also went down. But like they had Terry Rozier, Gordon Hayward, like you had a lot of vets that could help lift the floor and make things easier and keep those guys in situations where they're maximized. And even Memphis without Ja Morant continued winning and played well. Like it's really hard when you are starting an all youth lineup, which has been kind of one of the refrains of this podcast throughout the season. Especially they've had multiple times where they started a starting lineup that was younger average age than Gonzaga's lineup in the Final Four. Like that doesn't result in a lot of wins, right? And it results in frustration too, because when you're playing young players on their best nights, they're giving you a flash of who they could be, but on their worst nights, like
it's bad,
it's really bad. And like, if you're someone that's cynical, you might say, okay, well, that's them showing who they actually are. Like, they're not that good. I would argue that whenever you see that from a young player, they're never as bad as they are on their worst nights. And you hope as they get better that the good nights become a little more frequent. But hey, my Twitter mentions tell me otherwise sometimes. my Twitter mentions have another read on the situation. But you know what? If you guys have such a good read on the situation, positive or negative, I think you might have some fun playing the Cavs Pick'em game. If you have a good read on how the Cavs are playing right now, you're going to want to play Cavs Pick'em. Just download the Cavs app, championed by Westfield, and you're all set to go. Cavs Pick'em is a free-to-play predictive game that takes place during Cavs games, giving you a chance to win $2,500 and other prizes, such as signed memorabilia, tickets, team shop gift cards. Your next chance to win with Cavs Pick'em is Wednesday, April 21st against the Chicago Bulls. Just download the Cavs app, championed by Westfield, to play in game day. Plus, Jason, let me tell you, man, Carter is not going to be happy. That is the closest thing we've had to an ad read. And he just, like, he revels in those opportunities to get those ad reads in. So the fact that I got to do it while he's not around is really going to grind his gears. You know what? It's a tough break, but that's what happens when you miss out on all this fun. Moving on, though, to Wednesday's game. So, obviously, it's safe to assume Zach LaVine is not going to be playing, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. What do you feel like is kind of the key for the Bulls to come away with a victory? Is it just to play up to their potential? Is there a specific matchup you're looking at?
I think they have to keep playing hard defense again. Without Zach, they got to grind a bit more, and that's how they've won these last couple games. Again, holding teams under 100, just in general in the NBA these days is tough, especially the Bulls. The Bulls have just been struggling defensively so much. So being able to slow down the pick and roll game defensively, huge. They got to play through Vucevic again. He's been so good. I mean, his numbers have been really impressive offensively since he got to the Bulls. So like making sure they're feeding him again, he put them on his back against the Celtics. He closed out the game against the Cavs the other night. So yeah, playing through Vooch and just like playing and just honestly, just playing hard and playing scrappy. They got to do it without Zach. They're obviously without their top scorer, that puts them a bit more at a talent disadvantage. But if they play through Vooch offensively, they keep the ball moving a bit, they at least can kind of make up for not having that alpha dog there. And then again, just defensively, they can't let Sexton and Garland just completely break them down off the dribble all the time, because that, I mean, that has been a huge problem with the Bulls defense. Again, with, I mean, Coby White is not a good defensive player. Mm-hmm. The Bulls have had problems guarding quick guards like that and guarding pick and roll. So if they can at least keep those guys in check, I know last game, like, they had, those guys had decent numbers, but they weren't, like, scoring wise, at least they weren't huge. I know Garland had a really nice assist game as well, but like, if they can keep those guys somewhat in check and keep that score down and kind of grind out another game. I know the Cavs have struggled shooting three pointers, and that the last game, I think the Cavs are actually 12 of 30 from three, even though Kevin Love shot bad, but
yeah, they can 12 keep, 30.
If they can, they can at least defend the 3-point line and not let Garland and Sexton just completely destroy them off the dribble and the pick and roll. That should mean good things for the Bulls.
Well, the good news is right now, Colin Sexton isn't taking a lot of threes. Now, he missed a little bit of time with a groin injury, and I'm starting to wonder if maybe that's kind of nagging at him, because especially when you don't have, you're not fully healthy with that lower half, sometimes you don't want to take those shots from deep, especially when it's not really his most comfortable shot to begin with. And if the play-in is no longer in reach, maybe you rest him a little bit down the stretch, or at least don't play him back to backs. I'm not a trainer, and I'm speculating here, but we'll see. From a Cavs perspective, like, it really just is like they need to come out with intensity from the start, because like you look at, and when things are clicking, like, it is a team that makes sense. Like, in theory, Garland, Sexton, Okoro, Love, and Allen makes sense, at least offensively. They need to get a little better at the point of attack. I think the nice thing is Garland and Sexton do seem to be active on the defensive end, but it's not always channeled in the right ways, right? And I think Sexton in particular will struggle off of screens, and off ball is a little more prone to falling asleep, while Garland's got active hands. He suffers from being kind of slight of frame, so that makes things a little bit more difficult. Now, we've talked about the Cavs stretch big, Kevin Love not playing so well recently, and I do need to get your thoughts on Lauri Markkanen, because, I mean, as we go into the season, so Chicago's are obviously made a decision. We are going for the play-in spot. We're trying to go for the playoffs. We don't just want to make it in there. We got Vucevic. We want to make the playoffs. We don't want another pick, because, like, even, I guess in the East, even if you get the play-in and you don't make the playoffs, you're still going to have a decent chance to jump top four, which is what the Bulls pick is protected. But they kind of made a decision that they're going to go for it.
Yep.
Now, the Cavs obviously were trying to go for the play-in. And as we were evaluating, okay, well, if they don't get a high pick, what other options are there? I look at the market for guys like John Collins, Lauri Markkanen, and other options that might be available from teams that haven't really shown a willingness to pay. What is the reasoning for the Chicago Bulls? Like, when I saw speculation about Lauri Markkanen hitting the market and other teams kind of vying for his services, or at least fans, I don't see any pushback from Bulls fans. Like, they seem pretty okay with it. What's going on there?
Yeah, I think Lowry's kind of almost taken over as, like, a lot of teams fans have like a whipping boy, and I think Lowry is kind of it now. He's just been very disappointing. I had very high hopes for him. Obviously, he was a big part of the Jimmy trade. It was Zach Lowry and Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn is gone. Zach is at least blossoming an all-star. And then Lowry was, they were hoping he would be another pillar of this franchise for a long time. And he showed a lot of promise in those first couple of years. Like, he looked pretty good. He had some huge games. He would have some even like takeover games. And then last year was just kind of a mess that was between injuries. Injuries have been a problem throughout his whole career, but last year, like, he was kind of injured, playing through some injuries, and just his numbers were brutal. He had like one good month, but like, he started so poorly, and then just the year was just kind of a mess with especially with Boyle in there. And a lot of people were like, even including myself, like, oh, he's not being used properly. Like, Jim Boylan's just a mess for this roster. The entire team was just kind of a mess. Like, Carter was a mess. Satoransky wasn't good. Like, I mean, Zach took a step, but like, even like, a lot of these guys just seem like, you know, like, Jim Boylan's not using them properly. So now with Billy Donovan, hopefully this year will be the year for Lowry. He came out, started shooting pretty well, but then he had a COVID issue, so he missed some time. And the thing is, the Bulls just like did not really miss him that much. Like, they were playing Patrick Williams at the four, which I think a lot of people think that Patrick Williams might end up being just better as a four long term. We'll see about that, but like, they just didn't miss Lowry that much. He came back. He's had some like decent shooting games. If you look at his shooting numbers, like, they're not that bad. I mean, lately he's just been kind of rough. The problem is, he just if he's not shooting well, he just doesn't give you anything. His rebounding number is way down. I mean, his defense is not good. He doesn't play make for anybody. I mean, I think he's under an assist per game or like right around there. So like, he's not doing much off the dribble for you. He's not doing any playmaking. He's not really rebounding much. He's not protecting the rim that much. So like, if he's not just like en fuego from three, he's just not giving you that much at this point. So it's like, how much looking forward now, like how much do the Bulls want to pay for that? How much does any team want to pay for that?
There's Bargnani like, memes running.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Now. The Bargnani memes have been coming out. And like, I want to say that's harsh, but like the way he's been playing lately, it's not that harsh. He doesn't take advantage of like mismatches enough. Like
it's harsh, but there's parallels, right? Yeah, like right, that's what it really comes down to.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Bargnani put up nice numbers at the start of his career. Like he wasn't like a total bust. Like, oh, he had like, I think he had a 20 point per game average, but like as time went on, like, and he just like never really developed. He never went anywhere from there. Like Lowry's a guy who should be able to stick around. Like he can shoot the ball. Again, his shooting numbers are pretty good as a catch and shoot guy. He'll shoot decent numbers, but like if he can't just make an impact anywhere else, because even like with his good shooting numbers earlier this year, like the offense, like, he didn't impact the offense. If you look like the on off numbers, they just weren't in his favor with him in the starting lineup. Again, that's not all his fault, especially with the youthful starting lineup. Not always his fault, but like, they were really ugly at one point. They've gotten a little better since he's gone to the bench, because I think just like him going against bench units is probably a little better, and he can kind of take advantage of some of those mismatches offensively. But even then, like there's been too many times where teams they'll use guards and like small forwards on him in the post, and he just doesn't take advantage enough. He can do it occasionally, like last night against the Celtics, he had a couple strong finishes against smaller guys, but like it doesn't happen enough. And there have been a few games lately where he had a 0 point game recently, or he'll have three or four shots in like 15 or 20 minutes, and it's like, if he's not taking shots, there's just like no point to him being out there. So it's like, it's just been really frustrating with him that they tried to trade him at the trade deadline. There was obviously like the Lonzo talk. I don't know, like obviously any details of like what the exact negotiations there, but maybe
that would have made some sense. That would have made sense, because you talked about kind of needs and point guard that plays defense at the point of attack, that can run some offense, get guys open shots, getting some spacing around Zion. Like that was something that I was just saying there. I was like, that makes so much sense. Like so frequently I find like Twitter will come up with great hypothetical trades that they make sense for both sides. Now they also come up with some just insane
bonkers ones.
But then like there's things like, if I would have told somebody that the Cavs could give up Dante Exum and the Milwaukee Bucks first and they'd get Jared Allen back, I'd be an insane person. I wouldn't put that into a hypothetical fake trade, because that just doesn't make sense. Why wouldn't Houston want Jared Allen instead? Why wouldn't any team involved want Jared Allen? Like, that's not a lot to give up. And then you have something that's logical, that like Lonzo for Lauri Markkanen, and that just doesn't materialize. Like, NBA is crazy. Honestly, it's the one thing that's changed over the years of like talking about this league is I just don't make definitive statements anymore, because so much changes. You never know what's available. And it's part of the fun of it, but like it also just makes it very difficult to analyze at times.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we'll see like if they do like sign in trades like for each other in this offseason, they're both restricted free agents. Like, I do wonder, it seemed like at the deadline, since Lowry's stock was down and Lonzo had been playing really well at that point, like the Pelicans were, I think as a team, were playing pretty well. Like, I do wonder if the Pelicans were asking for more there and the Bulls just didn't think it was worth it to give up like another asset.
They just needed a loss to the Cavs. That's what needed.
Right, exactly. But yeah, so like, so yeah, we'll see, like, and like looking at the market, like in this off with this free agency, like obviously so many of the big names are now off the board. And like, we'll see who actually has how much money is out there. But like, so like, is someone going to give like Lowry like a fat offer sheet? Like, I just don't know how you can like look at him this season and be like, yeah, I want to pay that guy a ton of money. I mean, I know like the Bertans contract was like a point that we were looking at when he got five years, 80, and that's been a disaster so far. Like, I know he shot decently, but even then, like Bertans is like, and at least an elite, like he can shoot like deep threes off screens and stuff like that. So at least he has like that form. Like at this point, Lowry, like he can do some stuff off screens, but like, he's not, I don't think he's like as quite as versatile a shooting weapon as Bertans is. And like, but they're both guys.
Yeah.
Like,
I think Duncan Robinson's probably more in that Bertans role than Lowry is. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
right. Yeah.
And you've definitely dumped some ice water on my loins when it comes to Lowry Markkanen. Like I wasn't that interested anymore. Like, as the season's kind of progressed, the way that I felt is, whether it be through draft, trade, free agency, however it materializes, getting like that 3-4 forward is more interesting to me. Someone that can play that Jason Tatum type role, because I think the Cavs, especially looking at Sexton and Garland, you want to play up tempo. You want to play fast. You want to get those opportunities in transition. And that is going to help them more so than a traditional stretch four, because Laurie isn't going to play good enough defense to play the five. There is a player on the Bulls roster that fits that description, and to me is probably, if I had to guess, is the young guy you're most excited about, and that's Patrick Williams. Can you tell people how he's been playing this season?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, he's one of the youngest players in the NBA, so like I didn't have the highest expectations, and a lot of, when the Bulls drafted him, and even me myself, I'm not a draft guy, so like when I had heard the rumors of them like looking to pick Patrick Williams at number four, I was like, who, really this guy? Like, he's like a decent bench guy at Florida State, like this seems crazy. And then I read more about him, like, okay, I see it, like versatile, the Bulls needed wings, big forward, so like that kind of, like you were talking about, those three, that 3-4 like swingman type guy, and that's kind of what Patrick Williams has been. He started the beginning of the year, like Billy Donovan took the, he put him in the starting lineup right away. We all thought like Otto Porter would be the starting three. No, like Billy goes right away to Patrick Williams. Like he has been, I think he's shown flashes. There have been times where he is pretty invisible on offense. And I mean, I understand it. Like
I have him on my fantasy team. I'm aware.
Yeah. So I mean, Stacey King harps like every night about how like Patrick Williams needs to be like the number three option. And it's like, he's got to be more aggressive, but like, again, he's like 19, 20 years old. Like it's, and he's just not used to being a guy who's like taking the bull by the horns and like going out and getting his own offense all the time. So like, he does have to be more aggressive, but like he's shown like a better than expected shooting stroke. He's been really good, like in mid range. He's got a crazy high arcing 3-point shot. So like, and defensively, like he's taken on all the different assignments. He's guarded all the stars. He's guarded LeBron, Giannis, Kawhi. He's guarded point, like the other night, a couple weeks ago, he was guarding Devin Booker. He's gotten roasted by a lot of these guys because, again, he's a 19-year-old trying to guard superstars. Usually is not going to go very well for that player. And in general, like I don't think Patrick Williams should be guarding Devin Booker. I mean, he's just not that like fast. Like I wouldn't say he's like super, super versatile in the way that he can like guard like a one through, like a, be like a Ben Simmons, a Jim Lee guard, like 1-5. Like, I don't think he's like that. His mobility just isn't that great. He's not the quickest, like side to side and all that kind of stuff, but like he doesn't back down from any of these challenges. And he's gone against all these other stars, and like he tries, and I will give him that. And he's shown some other flashes in terms of like, well, he'll get aggressive, and he'll go to the basket, and he'll off the dribble, and he's done a few, like they'll give him a few pick and roll reps here and there. And he's a really good cutter. He gets a lot of deflections. He's kind of racked up some nice steal and block games recently. So like, there's just a lot to like there as like a jack of all trades, just really solid, decently versatile player. Again, I don't think he's like total like 1-4, 1-5 defender. Maybe he could develop into that. But so far, that was kind of the knock on him coming out, was that he wasn't the fastest guy, like going side to side and all that kind of stuff. So like, that's why I think a lot of people think maybe he's better as a four long term. But I mean, he's been playing the three a lot of the year. So like, either, I mean, he's definitely a 3-4 hybrid type.
Yeah.
Kind of
like Bulls, in that Larry Nance mold, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I think a lot of Bulls fans are really excited about his future. I know they're, when people get really excited, they talk about he's Kawhi 2.0, all that kind of stuff. And like, I mean, that's aggressive. Obviously, like Kawhi is a top four player in the league. If Patrick Williams even gets to like borderline all-star level, that would be fantastic.
Look, Kawhi never scored 30 points in a game. I think it took him until his fifth season. Like, you know what? It takes time. Maybe Patrick Williams will get there. Yeah.
And he is super young. And I think he's got a lot of room to grow. He's shown some really nice flashes. Based on my expectations, I think he's passed this season. And I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about him. And we'll hopefully he develops. It is interesting though, especially again, I mentioned like threading the needle with the development. And now like you have Vucevic and Levine trying to win now, like how, like you hope that his development is like pretty rapid. You don't want to put too much pressure on the kid to like have that super rapid development. So like, it will be interesting to see, especially depending on what they do this off season, the other type of moves they put around Zach and Vooch. Like, if they keep giving like Patrick Williams these huge minutes and they keep like riding his development while they also want to win big next season, like big, quote unquote, big, at least be like a legitimate playoff team, to see if he'll be able to step up to that challenge. And if they give him those huge minutes and if he can develop like that, I mean, that'd be huge for this franchise, because as nice as like Zach and Vooch is as a duo, and they should be really solid, again, playoff team, they should be at least, Taking that next step, they still need another high-level star player there. So will Patrick Williams be that guy? I have no idea. Do they use him as a trade chip to get that guy? We'll see. But he's definitely clearly a very important part of this team's future.
Yeah, it's so interesting because the Cavs, I feel like, are going to be in a very similar situation next year where they are trying to thread that needle between being a playoff team and developing the young guys. Now, it's going to be a little bit of a different dynamic because their best players are likely going to still be like 23 and under. But it's so fascinating to see how different teams approach this. And obviously, Chicago went the route of consolidating some talent, getting that proven star in Vucevic. Is Patrick Williams the only young guy on the Bulls right now that you're like seriously factoring into long-term team building, or is Kobe White still in there, or is there another guy I haven't mentioned that's being factored in? Because it's interesting that they do have these guys that are in their primes with LaVine and Vucevic, Patrick Williams, who, as you mentioned, is one of the youngest in the league. And then beyond that, like I don't feel like I have a great feel for where they're going from a team building standpoint.
Yeah, I think Kobe's kind of teetering. Like I said, he's been a little better these last couple games, but before that, when he was coming off the bench and the Bulls were losing, he was really struggling. When they lost the Magic last week or whatever that, whenever that was, Kobe looked unplayable. There have been times where he's been borderline unplayable. He's a bad defensive player. And the big problem is also that him and Zach are just not a good mix at all. Like, they can be really fun when they're hot. They had the game earlier this year against the Pelicans where they both hit like 8 or 9 threes. And like, first time in NBA history teammates have ever done that, which is crazy. But then, I mean, if you look at like their, I haven't looked at the lineup data in a little bit, but like when I was looking at it earlier this year, like the Zach Kobe lineup duo was just always atrocious. And a lot of it's the defense. They're just not good defenders. So when you're that bad at the point of attack in the backcourt together, that just kind of hurt the rest of the team. And then offensively, they kind of share a lot of the same flaws where they're just not really a natural point guard and they're just kind of gunners. So like having those flaws together, like the Kobe Zach thing just isn't the most ideal. That doesn't mean like Kobe can't be like a valuable, like just six man type for the next couple of years. And maybe we'll see where they go from there. Or maybe Kobe does develop over the next couple of years. And he is that point guard. Like, I don't want to like totally, one thing I try not to do, especially anymore, is just be too down on these young guys. And like saying this guy stinks. Like, he can't be good, because we see late bloomers and all that kind of stuff. So like, as like difficult as it can be to watch Kobe White these days, sometimes like, I don't want to say like this guy is definitely going to bust out of the league and that he's bad. That like the Bulls like have to trade him. Do I think they should look at possibly trading in this offseason? Absolutely. If you can get something good for him, like, I think you could find better fits next to your all-star shooting guard. Mm-hmm. Looking even past Kobe, I mean, the rest of the young guys on the roster right now, it's Troy Brown Jr., who they got in the trade in that Daniel Tyson, which I love that trade. I mean, the Bulls gave up. I mean, I know Daniel Gafford has been playing really well for the Wizards, but like, they got a veteran big in Daniel Tyson, who is just a really solid big, and he's been starting and closing games now for the Bulls. And Troy Brown Jr., like a possible like diamond in the rough type. He was out of the rotation in Washington. He's been getting rotation minutes now, and he's at least the Bulls, again, they need like deep wings. They need athletic wings who can actually like play defense. And like, they've been kind of deploying that Troy Brown in that role as, I don't want to say like a stopper, because he's still like not that good, but he's shown some flashes. Like, he did really well against Kyrie in a game recently. Like, he plays hard. Like, he's got good size at the position. He's not the best offensive player. His jumper is kind of a mess, but like, maybe he's a guy that could be part, even just as a bench guy. I mean, again, you need having those wings, versatile wings like that. Maybe he's a part of the long-term future, because I think he is in his third season right now. So I think they should have him for the rest of this year and then maybe possibly next season as well. But if you look past that, I mean, we talked about Lowry. It seems like the writing is on the wall with him. Wendell is gone. He's gone in the Vucevic trade. I mean, you look at the rest of the Bulls rotation, Tice veteran, Satoransky veteran, Thad veteran, Zach Vooch. Denzel Valentine is still on his rookie contract, but he's like 28 years old at this point, and he's definitely not part of the future. So like, at this point, yeah, like the Bulls like building through the draft and the whole young core thing, it's basically now it's Patrick Williams and then maybe Kobe White, and then I think now they're gonna try to, again, I think AK and Mark Eversley are gonna try to revamp the roster a bit more to make a bit more sense, balance it out, try to get more offense defense balance around Zach and Vooch. And I think that'll probably involve, it could involve Lonzo Ball. It could involve maybe some other veterans they try to bring in. Maybe they try to make another big trade somewhere, but yeah, the young core thing is kind of almost dead at this point. I hesitate to even call Zach part of the young core. Again, he's like 26 at this point. So like,
yeah,
out of those like really younger guys, like, it's Patrick Williams and then maybe Kobe White. I think at this point, again, I'd be surprised if Lowry comes back. Like maybe if no one gives him a fat offer sheet, maybe they bring him back on something that like a reasonable deal.
Maybe a Harrell contract, like yeah, kind of thing.
Yeah, and you look to like maybe even trade him down the line. It would stink to lose Lowry for nothing after investing so much in him. But like, I mean, just like even just now, I mean, he plays 15-20 minutes a game. I know he played decently well against the Cavs the other night, but like, I mean, he's just not doing that much. So like, you don't want to pay him a bunch of money. I just think after a while here, he probably just needs a fresh start. The Bulls could use a fresh start. They could just use their resources and better players around, especially when you have Zach and Vooch, maybe Kobe White as like your core. Like Lowry, like a stretch forward who can't play defense just isn't really the most ideal with Zach LaVine, Vucevic, and Kobe White. It's like, and then Patrick Williams is your other main guys.
It's not a great fit for the modern NBA period, yeah. But who knows, man? Like, honestly, sign and trades start to become a little more in fashion lately. So maybe that is the way it goes for Lowry. But I think with all teams, like, I don't put, like you said, you don't want to write off any young players. Yeah. Like for me, especially if I see a player on his rookie contract that's showing like flashes of an elite skill or things that like I feel can translate to good competitive team basketball, I'm going to like keep some stock in them. I'm going to keep an eye on that situation. And when it comes to like turning a franchise around and just becoming competent, like once you start becoming a more consistent playoff team and you become better, you become more attracted to free agents or players are more willing to work out a deal to get them traded to that team. Like there's so many options that open up that I never speak definitive about any team. Jason, before we wrap this up, I buried the lead because I like to leave a little something for our listeners every now and then for the end of a podcast. And I didn't mention, and I did this on purpose, I didn't mention that you are an editor at Clutch Points. And I need to know your favorite Clutch Points graphic from this season. I need your take on what that is.
Oh my God. There's just so many. There's been some I've retweeted. Oh my God. I can't even... I don't like have one like etched in my head because I mean, some of them are just like so ridiculous. And I do not actually make any of these graphics, but I do like have a role in like asking for these graphics. So like, oh my God,
man, I gotta say the Steph Curry butt pad one was pretty great.
Oh my, I don't think I saw that one happen live, but I think when I was looking through like the archives recently, I saw that one. Oh my, what was the one I retweeted one the other day? Like my guy Sean Hyken is always tweeting.
He lives for it. He lives for the clutch.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm a total fail right now because I can't like pull one off my head. Like, I mean, we do a lot of stuff, like great stuff with just like, I love some of this superhero stuff can always be a lot of fun. And just like, and I think maybe the most funny, just like just ridiculous situations. There was one, there was good stuff in the bubble as well. I think
The Daniel House.
Yes, that was it. I just because I can't think of like anything else specific, I'm going with like the Daniel House and with like the nurse in like the hotel. God. Yeah. So I will go with that one. Like I'd have to look back because I mean there's been so many good ones. And again, like Hyken tweets out so many of them, but that one is absolutely hilarious. Just those situations where it's like this like really should not have like this a graphic like this, and it's like borderline distasteful. But like it's still kind of funny. That's what makes it great.
I'm gonna peel back the curtain because I want to get the submission in here. Carter is actually lurking in the shadows right now. He wasn't expected to be available for this podcast and wasn't able to actually talk this late. But he just sent a message because he's listening in. Lonnie Walker dead with a sprained wrist.
Yes. Oh my God. And it's like, is this guy die? This guy actually dead?
Oh my God. Here, like, yes. I just love it because honestly, like, and it's a big part of like what we do. It's just we're going to approach sports with a little bit of a reverence because this is supposed to be entertainment. It's absolutely not life or death. And I'm like, if people want to tune into someone screaming for heads to roll after every loss and like screaming at the top of their lungs with excitement after every single win, like we're not going to be that podcast. Like this is fun. This is entertainment. I just love that Clutch Points is bringing that irreverence to it. Jason, thank you so much for joining the podcast. Make sure all you listeners are checking out the Cash Considerations podcast as well as Clutch Points. Anything else you want to plug for us before we go?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_J. I'm always tweeting about the Bulls. I'll be tweeting about Bulls Cavs tomorrow. Blogbull.com. Also, I do some stuff for the Bulls. I'll be writing about Bulls Cavs tomorrow. I'll be recapping the game there. I also just do some Bulls stuff at Forbes.com as well. I think that's pretty much it. You mentioned Cast Considerations. It's me and Ricky O'Donnell, our Bulls podcast. We'll be talking Bulls. We're part of the Blue Wire Network. So that's good stuff there. I think that's about it. So yeah, Cash Considerations, Bloggable, Clutch Points. Check out all those graphics. Please follow Clutch Points to see all those great graphics because they're absolutely hilarious. you said they bring brings a good smile to your face. There's so much goofy stuff that happens. People take stuff way too seriously sometimes with the NBA. And Clutch Points will bring a smile to your face with some of the just goofy and hilarious graphics.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jason. I really had a great time talking with you on this podcast. Carter lurking in the shadows, just not contributing. But you know what? It's fine. He can do a producer and stick in that producer role for one episode. Thank you to all our listeners. Thank you for your support. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Download the Cavs app to play the Cavs Pick'em game championed by Westfield to play in Game Day Plus. And until next time, go Cavs.